I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Congratulations, fellow conspiracy realist. We have made it closer to the end of February, and as a bit of a small celebration here, we are sharing the stories of our fellow listeners. We are going to learn about one of our favorite things, fast food conspiracies. We are going to dive into an incredibly troubling story about true crime that remains unanswered today. Before we do any of that, we're going to go to our voicemail banks with an excellent question about streetlights.
Oh, yeah. What's a song with streetlights,
guys? Streetlight people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Living just to find emotion.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Well, streetlights, guys. Let's hear from Matt. Not this one. The different map.
Are they traffic lights or street lights?
Street lights, baby.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay.
All lights can be street lights. You know what I mean?
That's very true.
These are the lamps that illuminate streets and roads in your very part good. Of town. Guaranteed. Here we go.
Hi, my name's Matthew Matthias. All good. I was wondering if you can help me research the purple lights that are appearing near like rest areas and main off ramps off of highways and interstates. I live up in Washington, Olympic Peninsula, and I've noticed there's lights close to the Walmart. I drove my son to Oregon and there's purple lights near the rest area. And be honest with you, they're quite helpful because if you know there's purple lights, you can pull over and hit the rest area. So I was wondering why nobody talks about it. I talked with my 13-year-old son about it, you know, the entire drive. Well, not the entire drive. But nonetheless, can you help me figure out what's going on? Because I think it's a good idea, but some people may not like it. All right, guys. Love your show. Haven't missed a one. Trust me. It's part of my life that I can't get rid of, kind of like my finger. So, stuff you don't want to know, you're my pinky finger and I won't cut you off ever. All right. Love you guys. Bye.
just don't cross the Yakuza.
Well, that's good to know.
That's a very, very interesting reference, Matt Matthias or Matthew.
Isn't it?
You know, Matt, I think the reason that I was confused or was asking about traffic lights, because in my mind, I'm like, what if there was a fourth color of traffic light? And it was purple, and then they were just spontaneously doing that without being programmed or having the right color lens to do so.
Oh, that still is
wild. Why would this be happening? This is very interesting.
Also, to be clear, I could have totally been in one of these environments and had no idea.
Because of the color issue.
Yes.
So. Yeah. Well, purple would signify turn around, right? So it's like go down, stop. Mm. Turn around.
Purple might just be like, vibe it out. Feel
vibe it out.
You know, situational awareness. See if the other cars are cool. But this is not what we're talking about. We're not talking about traffic lights, right, Matt? We're talking, I'm going to call you Matt Prime for this. We're talking about just your conventional, like in the West, you often see iodine sort of colored lights, right? Like,
For a long time, there was a very specific kind of orangey glow that streetlights had. And pretty much every city in at least the United States, a lot of countries, states have their own kind of thing because everybody's got their own little contracts, right? With a company that provides specific bulbs for specific light fixtures that all get, you know, they're all the same and they get set up along all the streets. Mm-hmm. Often it's even by a municipality, sometimes like it's the local government. In this case, we are talking about LED lights, the newfangled LED lights that are coming out that everybody's seeing.
Ooh, buddy.
Which I love, by the way. I love LED lights. They're great.
They don't get hot. They can be like every color. I'm a big fan of the Hue light system. I got them all over my house and they're really neat and very powerful.
And that's short for light emitting diode.
Yes. Yeah, they're electric. I don't know. They're electronic lights. Yeah. It's not burning anything, right? And even with an incandescent bulb, you're not like those. You're not burning a filament or a piece of metal or substance that's in there. It's just a diode that goes, woo, there's light here when you shoot electricity through it.
Sorry, Phoebus Cartel, your time
is done. It's just so impressive because typically we think of light as being associated with heat, but not the case with these. I mean, you can leave the LEDs on indefinitely and they won't produce any heat at all.
Yes.
Well, I think they have a heat sink, right? Because they're semiconductors.
I guess so. But all I know is that, you know, I can leave my Hue stuff on and it still remain, they remain cool to the touch. So it's impressive technology and it's, you know, and they're being used more and more in film production and in like light shows, and they're better for the environment because they last a lot longer, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
But why are they purple, though?
Yeah, good question.
Why are they purple? There are a ton of conspiracy theories rolling around on ye olde internet about why these purple lights are occurring on interstates and rest stations?
Mm-hmm. Sure, rest areas.
Areas across the United States. They've been seen in Washington State, Greensboro, Alabama, Wichita, Kansas, Boston, Massachusetts, and yes, boys, Atlanta, Georgia. They've been seen pretty much in every major city, and there's a reason for it. Hmm. And it has to do with the way LEDs have evolved and the technology used to turn the light that's coming out of the actual, that's being emitted from the actual LED, how to turn that, this pleasant kind of bluish white color that we're all kind of now used to, or even a slightly more orange white color.
Okay.
So we know RGB. What's RGB, guys?
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Roy J. Biv.
Besides red, black, and green, which I think we all know is very important. But also there's, sorry, Ben, shout out. But it is red, blue, green. And that is the light spectrum, right? That's how we view light. Now, it was discovered quite a while back that if you took a blue LED, right? An LED that is designed to give off blue light exclusively. Then you put it in a bit of a vacuum, right? Seal it up. And inside that vacuum, you put some phosphor, this yellow phosphor. You can create this exact hue of white that you're looking for. And you only need one blue LED rather than a series of LEDs that would create white light when it shines through, right? And the great thing is, guys, you can manufacture that white LED light a lot cheaper than if you put a more complicated series of LEDs into one bulb, right? Mm-hmm. So
you're going to save a ton of money and be able to sell a cheaper bulb if you use this blue LED yellow phosphor combination. And that is a thing that a company figured out how to do this. It's an Acuity sub-brand called American Electric Lighting. Acuity is like this huge company that controls a lot of the LED game that's going on right now. It's huge. We need to actually look into them just a little bit, but it's a huge company. American Electric Lighting is their sub-brand, and they created these LED bulbs. And these LED bulbs, boys, the reason why it's purple, it's so simple, and it's really kind of sad. The container that's on top of that blue LED is starting to fray and break away, so more and more blue light is escaping, and it's creating this purple hue. So you're still getting some of the yellow coverage, which is, it's just changing the, basically the color temperature of the light.
So it's a design flaw, essentially, in the case.
But it's not planned obsolescence.
Well, allegedly, it's not planned obsolescence. According to the major stories, and there's not a ton coming out of the company Acuity that owns the sub-brand, but it is just a flaw in the manufacturing process. So these things were supposed to last significantly longer, but they did not. And across not only the U.S., but in Vancouver, in parts of Canada, and other places where these same bulbs have been shipped, they're all experiencing it. So there's basically a great purpling that is occurring and will continue to occur until these LED bulbs get replaced, which is happening, by the way, in cities across the United States.
I don't really fully understand the tech behind this, but I do know that, you know, Philips, another, you know, lighting megalith that makes the Hue bulbs, you can buy bulbs that only do white, and they're significantly cheaper than the ones that do like every color, which is, you know, the Hue bulbs that I have in my system. So I'm wondering if it's a similar deal with those, where I guess the color changing ones have some sort of series of LED lights that can then combine in various mixes to create whatever color and blend that you're looking for.
There are a lot more components in a bulb like that, right? Yeah, which means they're significantly more expensive to manufacture, which means the price point for the end user is quite a bit higher. Philips bulbs, they're not as a big player in the game anymore because they make these, what a lot of people consider higher quality bulbs, because they're more expensive, because there are more components within them. These are like, if you imagine, if you've ever been to a Home Depot or Lowe's or one of those places, and I just did this for my parents like a couple weekends ago. I bought like a 16 pack of bulbs, you know, and you're going to replace all the bulbs in a house that's got old incandescent still. They're super cheap compared to like any of the other major LED bulbs.
Especially if you buy in bulk, right? I did something recently. I was not caught up with light technology because I am not a friend of the lights, but I, but I found a, it's a dumb story. I want to be too personal here, but I'll show you guys a picture. I replaced a bunch of lights with LED ones and I got the wrong wattage. And so now it looks like there's a Dexter level like crime scene lit up whenever I turn on this thing in the kitchen. The idea though with color, it's not hurting anyone, right? Matt Prime and Matt Matthias.
Well, it's not hurting anyone. And as Matt Matthias said, it actually was super helpful because I knew where the rest areas were because I could see them way down the highway. I mean, but again, it's kind of not the point. The point is to be able to see the sign that says rest area and to be able to legibly read that and then get to where the rest area is. But you know, this is also happening in neighborhoods. So you guys, especially here in Atlanta, on some of the streets, if you're in, I'm just trying to think of areas like East Atlanta, when you're rolling through and there are purple lights and it just looks eerie and strange. Like it shouldn't be that way.
Especially on a foggy night.
Which is why there are conspiracy theories like, they're marking areas of like high vaccinations, or they're marking areas where, it's everywhere. There's all kinds of theories out there about what these purple lights could mean. Some of them said, what was one? If you've received the vaccine, you will glow underneath these purple lights. Oh, good. And that's how they'll tell.
And receive 5G.
I like how straightforward that is. It's very efficacious. Also, I think I know the part of East Atlanta that you're talking about, Matt. In our fair metropolis, I thought the lights were blue because I had years back, I couldn't tell if they were purple, but I had been in a blue streetlight situation. You guys know I noctivagate quite often, and I found like...
Those were red lights, Ben.
You would have to tell. You would have to be there to tell me because I wouldn't know. But I could see blue, okay? there's this thing that's been going for a number of years. There is a widespread belief that a couple of municipalities in the world, particularly in East Asia and I want to say Western Europe, replace their typically yellow streetlights with blue lights in an attempt to reduce crime and also suicide rates. Have you guys ever heard that?
No.
I guess it reminds me of those lights that people buy in places where it stays dark for a really long time.
Right.
To keep being depressed, to keep getting the sads.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. It does remind me of some of the psychology stuff. The psychological studies on color, like with restaurants and elementary schools,
makes you hungry and things.
It's interesting to me. Like, I wonder how hard that science is, it seems
rock
like there's
hard,
something
Matt.
To it.
Rock hard.
So it's like Tokyo and Glasgow in Scotland. Well, Tokyo and Japan, Glasgow and Scotland. Sorry. Apologies if there's a town called Glasgow, Japan. We all need to learn more about geography, I guess. But I read that this installation, this purposeful installation of blue colored streetlights had reduced crime. And so when I first heard this idea, you introduced this to Matt Prime and Matthias about purpling of lights, I wondered whether it was purposeful.
Give me that gunshot. I was gonna ask too, speaking of lighting conspiracies, are incandescent bulbs still being produced, and if so,
yes,
what is the reason for purchasing those ever over the much more cost effective and energy efficient LED bulbs?
Short form affordability.
Mm.
It just costs less that at the front, I would hazard.
Because, for a while, there was probably resistance, not to make an electrical pun, to LED bulbs, from more legacy manufacturers until they were able to get on the LED train themselves and then, start pivoting their business model to those.
I'll just give you an example of my parents. Literally, a couple weekends ago, I went up there. I noticed that several of their bulbs were out up in their upstairs bedroom. I was like, that's weird. Hey, Mom, do you have any more lights? Mom, you got lights? She's like, oh, yeah, I got some bulbs. She brings to me a box of bulbs that I think she's had since 1996 or something. Yes. And they are all incandescent bulbs. And I go and I unscrew a couple in the bedroom. They're all incandescent bulbs. I'm just like, what is happening here?
Did you not get the memo? Yeah.
And she had a box full of working incandescent bulbs that she just kept around that for one reason or another, I guess they just, if you buy like a pack of four, but you only need two or three, the extra one goes in this box or something. I wonder how many people are still, doing that.
Working through their giant bulk purchases of these replacement bulbs.
Yeah. I don't know.
Surprising they lasted that long though, Matt.
Dude.
Because they typically don't have that long of a life. Right?
I'm being facetious when I say since 96.
It's really quite insane how much longer LED bulbs last. I mean, it's borderline like forever. It's kind of crazy how long those things last.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. So really, guys, in conclusion, there's not much to this. I highly recommend everybody read The Great Purpling from Adam Rogers, writing for Business Insider. It was published on November 29th, 2022. Fantastic read, The Great Purpling. And according to that, reports of these purple streetlights have been coming through since 2020, roughly, from everywhere from Ireland, Florida, North Carolina, New Mexico. Just everybody is getting these lights. So I don't think it's anything to worry about,
it really more speaks to the scale of the company that we're talking about, which is probably one reason why it's smart to be smart on our end to look into that, you know, when you have like a company like that, that's just spreading their wares, you know, internationally like that, and then has this inherent design flaw that starts to get people freaking out.
And I've accused myself, but I think it's super cool. You know,
yeah, I was going to say,
even if I can't see it, it sounds awesome.
Well, to Ben's point, like, should we have some cities that are this like blacklight kind of color?
Let's do
or,
it.
Or a city that's like got its own
laser tag
hue,
vibes.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
That's this the hue of what Charleston, South Carolina.
That's a really good idea, actually.
Interesting choice.
It's like the choice of Christmas decorations in a downtown municipality, right?
I don't know. I think it would be cool.
Identity.
What would your city's color be?
I don't know.
Let us know. We'll tell you how to contact us at the end of this. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we've returned with another message from you. This message comes to us from K Knight. K-N-I-G-H-T. I think that's a nickname. But this is a fun one. Here we go. Hey, guys. Love the podcast. I've got a funny one for you. I've worked jobs wherein my car was my desk. Driving around involved taking my lunches at various fast food joints to save time. During COVID years, I found myself noticing a weird trend. Mind you, this is purely anecdotal, but when I would order extra ranch at places like Burger King, I'd almost always have to go back inside after it was left out of my bag, or would just huff to myself in disappointment and drive away in defeat with my sauceless fries. Supply chain shortages were, and still are, a thing. But I started to wonder, do some restaurants do this on purpose? Do some big chains do this to make millions? Here's where it gets interesting. BK, that's Burger King, charges anywhere from 10 to 25 cents per ranch pack. I imagine other drive-through restaurants are comparable. Let's assume some math here based on at least some realism. BK sells 2.1 billion Whoppers per year. Let's assume roughly half of them are meals with a medium fry. Let's then assume about a quarter of those are meals with an extra sauce, because what monster eats fries without sauce? That's 262,500,000 BK meals with sauce added on at, for simple math's sake, an average of 10 cents per ranch or buffalo, etc. dipping sauce. That's a profit margin of $26,250,000 on sauce. And I imagine the sauce is peanuts on the margins to produce. Let's say for each 10-cent ranch pack, a penny was needed to produce it. That still leaves us with an incredible net profit of over $20 million on sauce packs sold per year. If you're Burger King in the midst of a supply chain shortage, however, would you really want to be making $20 million when you could recoup the lost funds by basically selling the sauce and not giving it out? Let's imagine, as a hypothetical, that one out of every 10 customers is accidentally robbed of their sauce due to a drive-thru worker honestly forgetting to add it. Let's be honest, they are doing intense work on their feet on the daily and genuinely forget about sauces at times. Let's also assume, for complicated orders, another sauce on average is lost. Then let's assume a manager, to make up lost revenue, encourages its staff to forget on purpose one sauce per 10 customers. That brings us to 7 sauces per 10 ordered actually landing in the bag. That's 30% of the sauce profit, $7,875,000 being forgotten, on purpose or with intention. That will be sold at that price without a need for profit loss due to supply. In essence, BK makes more than the $26 million on the sauce. They make the grand total of over $30 million as a result of leaving it out of 30% of orders. This is a certified lost in the sauce moment that I thought you might enjoy. Feel free to call me Kylo on the air. Okay, there we go. We're Kylo is what we were calling our friend here. If you use this, and feel free to include everything above and wordsmith it if you need to. Keep up the great work. Figured this oddity of an idea would be a nice respite from some of the more serious stuff. Take care. Woo! Interesting stuff. I mean, yeah, when you think about the scale of these types of, you know, restaurants, these international, you know, conglomerates, and I never really thought about how the sauce adds up. I certainly have been to places that don't, at least on paper, charge you for every sauce. But there are certainly places that do when you ask for extra sauce. And if you actually take the time to look at your itemized receipt, you'll see a couple of 10-cent charges or whatever for the sauce. And especially if you're at like maybe a slightly more bespoke or upper end fast food place, they'll definitely charge you for the sauce, especially if they have like branded, you know, nice kind of proprietary sauces like a Chick-fil-A or what have you. But what do you guys make of this idea of intentional leaving out of the sauce in order to recoup some of this stuff? I don't know.
I don't buy it.
I think it's a little bit of a stretch. I think it's interesting to think about that.
It is perhaps conspiratorial. And Kylo, I really appreciate your time here. It is, however, quite plausible in that we remember the franchise model rules of the day, such that a lot of fast food enterprises, though they may seem uniform, are little fiefdoms regionally of their own. And that's why you hear little taglines like "with participating locations," right, for any kind of deal, because ultimately those franchisees can make the decision over what gets charged. I also could argue like this is plausible due to the concept of shrinkflation. You know, remember when nuggets went from X number to Y number in some locations? That's because, you know, increasingly as food costs skyrocket here in the U.S., people are going to fast food locations less often. It's kind of weird. You know, we see this trend that's been going on, like definitely escalating during the pandemic. So I would say, is Burger King overall, like, are they having boardroom meetings where they're like, we got to start screwing people over on the sauces? Probably not. But are franchisees maybe doing that to save cost. I think it's quite plausible because we talked about it in the past. The restaurant business is tough. It's cutthroat. And those margins are pretty slim unless you get to like Michelin star level.
And Matt, I know you had a theory here, and or you were this was incredulous. I think maybe you were a little skeptical. But I also want to point out that there are some overarching corporations that have a much stronger grasp over what their franchisees do and don't do, you know, where you really have to like fall in line and like do the things, do the promotions. And you're right, Ben, there are others where it is participating locations, et cetera. But then you have stuff like Chick-fil-A where, I mean, the uniformity in those locations are pretty across the board, you know. But Matt, what are your thoughts here on what could possibly be going on? Is this good intentioned forgetfulness, you know, or is there something deeper at play?
I just would agree with what Ben was saying. I think you cannot account for the individual actions of someone who was working the line on Burger King. You know, somebody who just may accidentally forget that one, but wouldn't forget the sauce every time, but once every 24, 40 orders forgets to put the sauce in the bag or something, right? I think that's what it is. That's what I've experienced. Sometimes I get a sauce, sometimes I don't. I don't know. I don't feel like there's any big money grab here because the money grab is charging 10 to 25 cents for a sauce packet, like what Zaxby's does now. That's another franchise, another brand.
Well, and that probably just largely offsets the sauces that they give away for free. You know what I mean? When they are able to like recoup some of that by charging. Because I've certainly been in situations where, again, because of the individual choice or action of the employee, you aren't charged for the sauce. Or perhaps you had to wait a little bit long, so they give you some sauces for free or whatever it might be just to make you happy. But I think what I'm most taken by with this email is just all of the sauce math. I guess I never really thought about how much those sauces add up in theory if you're charging what they actually, you know, are supposed to charge for them and then what the margins are on those sauces because, you know, individual packaging, as we know, is A, quite wasteful and B, can add up as well.
But it's a little weird because the cost of producing that sauce per ounce or whatever is worked into, I would say, and this I'm spitballing here, but I would say is worked into the cost of that meal that you're buying or
that's
that,
a good point.
Those fries that you're ordering or whatever. And they're doing that on purpose and they're probably slightly overestimating. That would be the smart move, right? Because it's going to be negligible for the end user. You're going to pay like 5 cents, 20 cents more. It's not even going to be a full 20 cents more. It'll be like 5 cents more.
And we also know about how, like, you know, companies at this level of scale have things like breakage built in to their formulas about like things that don't get charged or that get stolen or whatever it might be. You know, like there's going to be some stuff that's going to fall off and that's not going to ultimately be a source of revenue, you know, because of just, the individual actions. And you're moving quickly. Like you said, these folks are very busy. They're working really hard and doing a lot of manual labor on their feet. And sometimes they might forget to put the sauce in completely unintentionally. But again, sometimes I've gotten bags from fast food places where they give you way too much sauce. You know, like 10 ketchup packets that, and I'm ashamed to say it, but it's just true, that end up in the trash. And I almost wish they wouldn't give you that unless you requested it because it feels wasteful on your part as a consumer. I sometimes put those things in the fridge, but then I'm like, I'm not going to use these sauces that are in my fridge. It's just not going to happen. So I end up throwing them away when I'm clearing out my fridge later.
Wonder if anybody else out there is getting the, I don't know what you call this. I'm feeling an aversion to the word sauce right now, and I don't know why, but every time we're saying it now, my body is irking.
Sauce me up, baby.
I don't know why.
Is ketchup a sauce? I guess technically. What doth a sauce make?
A gloopy. It's a condiment.
Is a condiment and a sauce the same thing? I don't know. These are the important questions that keep us up at night here on stuff they don't want you to know. Well, Kylo, definitely some food and sauce for thought here. So we're going to let Matt cringe his way into this here break, and then we're going to come back with one more message from you.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs.
on demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we have returned with a couple more messages. First, want to go to Curious in Seattle. Curious in Seattle, you said, "Hello, love your show. Have you ever done a deep dive into Thomas Wales, the federal prosecutor who was murdered in his Seattle home in 2001, a case which remains unsolved to this day?" Quick response, we have not, Curious in Seattle, and thank you for bringing this to our attention. Curious, you continue saying, "It's been so hard to keep up with the theories and plot twist and speculation of FBI informants and cover-ups over the years. Wondering if you have any thoughts." Let's start there. Have you guys heard the story of Thomas Crane Wales?
No, but on a cursory Google, it does seem that he was a big advocate for gun control. And I can only imagine that some of the conspiracy theories surrounding his demise might target folks that are not, you know, about gun control.
Matt, is this one familiar to you?
No, I'm checking out the FBI website right now. Yeah. Learning all about it.
Yep, they have an open bounty for information leading to a conviction. The United States DOJ is offering a reward of up to $2 million leading to the arrest and conviction of people responsible for the murder of this official. So let's go to the night of October 11th, 2001. It's a little bit before 11 p.m. Thomas Crane Wales is in the basement of his home in Seattle, Washington, where he is currently working as an assistant U.S. attorney, and he's been in that job for almost two decades. He's mainly focused on white-collar crime cases. He was shot several times through the window of his basement office as he was sitting by his desk writing on his computer. This doesn't immediately kill him. He expires at a hospital the next day, and this year, right now, in the beginning of 2024, this has never been solved. As we pointed out earlier, he was involved in gun control. But I got to tell you guys, this is pinging in my spidey sense. For everything that I've read about the story, it feels like there's something fishy at play because whomever killed him was clearly executing a hit. It's fair to say. Like, they knew enough about the layout of the house to avoid avoid certain indicators. They knew also, I don't know, but they also made dumb mistakes. Like, they left shell casings from the pistol behind.
Interesting make of pistol, right? A Makarov pistol that apparently had some sort of aftermarket barrel. And I believe this individual was a big proponent of things like trigger locks. It was behind a referendum that would have required gun owners to use trigger lock. And he was president of an organization called Ceasefire. So it does feel like the type of stuff that this killer used indicates that they would have been someone who vehemently opposed everything that this individual stood for. Well, politically,
it would be a pretty smart thing to use as cover, right? Mm. If you hired someone to go kill him.
Look like a gun nut, just angry and you know, yeah.
The FBI had a similar, I don't want to say that was their conclusion yet, but they had a similar contemplation. I want to give a big thanks to the journalist over at the Seattle Times, who you point out as well, Curious in Seattle, especially Mike Carter, who had a piece that was originally published in 2016. And these pieces still remain relevant because there has been no results in the investigation. There are a couple people that I should say law enforcement liked for this, including an airplane pilot who is living in Bellevue. And this guy was prosecuted by Wales before Wales was killed. It's going back and forth, but this is like an active mystery that has not been solved. Cartels have been accused. There have also been lots of allegations of conspiracy. And I'm pretty convinced at this point, though still got some strings out there, I'm pretty convinced that there is a group of people who knows the identity of the shooter. And I think the FBI might know who they are, but they can't move yet. Does that sound implausible?
Not implausible at all. No, quite the opposite. There's an interesting little tidbit too about an FBI informant who said that like his cellmate of his copped to the murder, but then upon being on the receiving end of a lie detector test, that was believed to have been a fabricated story. But again, we also know lie detector tests are kind of
pseudoscience. You're talking about Scott Lee Kimball.
Scott Lee Kimball, who apparently was found to be a serial killer and FBI informant. That's a weird mix. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's also not uncommon for somebody who's already incarcerated to cop to something.
A million percent.
They'll do it for a hot lunch.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I know that sounds brutal.
Just to break the boredom. No, 100%. Yeah.
And so the information that we have discussed so far is incredibly easy to find. It's like in the Wikipedia articles. You don't even have to go to the talk tab. But the one of the other issues here is the idea of tracing back the firearms, right? We talked about that replacement gun barrel. You know, one of the big parts of the investigation into this 2001 assassination has been tracking down over 2,500 replacement gun barrels. And that's entirely because it may be the break that investigators need in the case. And over the past 15 years, FBI has been able to track down all of those gun barrels. There's like 2,600 to their very first buyer, who was either a gun dealer or purchaser. And the problem is they still didn't get an answer from it. So they don't know. Like, it gets to a point where you don't know where else to look, which is why the reward for information keeps raising and raising.
What would be the reason for replacing a barrel? To increase the range or something like that? Or would it be to obfuscate, you know, the original purchase so that you would, because of the, as we know, like barrels have different striations on bullets. And if you have an aftermarket barrel, then it would no longer be associated with whatever the original like logged purchase might be. Is that sort of the idea? Or maybe there's a combination of the two.
You can replace it to improve accuracy. People often replace it to improve safety because, you know, a firearm can get a lot of wear. We're talking cracks, bulges, erosion. We're not firearm experts, but there are absolutely legitimate reasons to replace a barrel. And it's strange because I'm looking through this case, Curious in Seattle, and what I'm finding is that the FBI never really gave up on it, even when the leads were increasingly sparse or increasingly dead ends. They do think right now, or at least several years ago now, but as of 2018, the FBI concluded that there was a contract killer. There was an active operative, a professional hitman or hit person who did the deed here.
Is that what would put this in the jurisdiction of the FBI? The idea that it was a contract killer hired to assassinate a public official?
I think it's more so that he was an assistant U.S. attorney.
I see.
This would be the only assassination of someone in that position in the history of the United States.
Is it weird that it's exactly 1 month to the day after the September 11 attacks?
I think that's... I'm glad you bring that up, Matt, because there's also the question of noise. Like, why don't more people know about this investigation? There are a lot of things that happened around 2001.
I don't know. That's weird to me. But okay, everything's fine.
Everything's fine.
Is this an episode, guys? This is interesting.
Yeah, that's what I said at the top. Yeah, yeah. I do believe this is an episode. We know that right now there are still active questions to be answered. There was something that really stood out to me. There was an FBI official who didn't give their name. They were reported as an official, quote, familiar with the investigation, who said there is a very small group of people who knows what happened and they never talk about it. So it sounds like that pilot that I mentioned earlier, who was a strong suspect, sounds like he hasn't been really named in a lot of public reporting because he wasn't officially charged. So it's something where, again, if you're one of the good guys, you have to fight by good guy rules.
Did you mention, Ben, that in 2007, the FBI slashed the staff assigned to this case down to just two?
I alluded to that earlier with the way they trimmed down stuff.
Is that an indication that they know what's going on or that it's no longer a priority? That was my wondering.
It's indicative of the battle over resources. Like how many hours of professional work can we put into something is the question they have to ask. And unfortunately, the question they have to answer at every annual review. I don't know. This really caught me curious because I had not heard of this and it sounds like none of us had. It does very much feel like an episode in the future.
Oh, yeah.
Unless we can solve it right now. Can anybody solve it?
No, I think we need
a little more
workshopping on this one.
You guys, do you ever just sit in your house with a light on when it's super dark outside just to like
be a target?
Tempt the hitman outside? Be like, come on, let's go.
I sit in the dark in a room next to a room with the light on.
Smart. Decoy. That's cool. I lay prone. Typically. You guys watch Mr. and Mrs. Smith, by the way? The new Donald Glover reimagining of that movie with Brad Pitt and what's her face? Angelina Jolie.
No.
It's really good. And there's a whole episode with Ron Perlman where they're protecting him and they're in this house and there's a potential of assassins, you know, shooting through windows and they have to be really thoughtful about the lights and all of that stuff. But I think it's really good, you guys. I highly recommend checking it out.
And with the case of Wales here, we know that there are, I didn't understand this either. There are more investigative files and documents about this than there are over the Enron case.
Whoa.
Do you remember the Enron case, you guys?
Of course.
Yeah.
We made a movie about that, right?
Let's save it. Let's do an entire thing. This is a massive discussion.
Yes, I think so too. We got the micro version out of the way. Let's go for the macro version in a podcast platform near you very soon.
Yeah, we'll cut it off here. Thank you for tuning in, everybody. We can't wait to hear from you. We'd love to share your stories with your fellow conspiracy realists. Thank you to Kylo. Thank you to Matthias. Thank you to Curious in Seattle. If you would like to join the show, we can't wait to have you. We try to be easy to find online.
Boy, do we ever. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff on YouTube, where we've got weekly video content coming at you. You can also find us at Conspiracy Stuff on X, FKA Twitter, and also on Facebook, where we have our Facebook group, Here's Where It Gets Crazy. On Instagram and TikTok, you can find us at Conspiracy Stuff Show.
Call our voicemail system just like Matt did. Give yourself a cool nickname. You've got 3 minutes to say whatever you want. Do at some point let us know if we can use your name and message on the air. If you've got more to say than can fit in that 3 minutes, why not instead shoot us a good old-fashioned email? We are
the people who read every email we get. It's one of the absolute best ways to contact us. Give us the pictures. Give us the ancillary links. Tell us what's on your mind. We can't wait to hear from you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, where we are. Conspiracy at iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.